Hey, I'm Chuck Liddell. You're watching Icebreakers.
Watching Icebreakers. My name's Adam Ray. I'm on the show, too. Try to catch the ball.
Fuck!
Icebreakers, back at it. Chuck Liddell, Adam Ray. Special guest today. Longtime friend of Chuck Liddell, right?
Yeah,
since
right.
You guys, I guess, since I just found out, since you were... Not since you were 18, since 1998.
Well, no, somewhere around that.
Somewhere around that.
Yeah,
time,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Tell the viewers the romantic tale of how you two became. Oh,
you
Jesus
want
him? Christ.
You want, I hit my head again.
Yeah. Yeah, I did that with my power. You know?
Yeah.
Don't tell the wrong version of the story, man. Don't mess with
it. Yeah.
Well, we met on Bumble.
Yeah,
and,
dude, it was going then. Yeah, people don't know. It was only out to like 500 users.
Well, it had a recent resurgence, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I mean, we both wrestled, but he was like well known for it in our town. Like, he was really well known for college and then kickboxing, and before he was well known for what he does now, you know. But
yeah.
I was a UPS driver going to school doing engineering, and we just had a lot of friends in our circles, I think, overlapping, and then I think he met me at one of the parties through one of our friends.
Yeah, I was just saying, he was actually doing some magic at one of the parties, I think.
You
probably.
Were?
Probably. He was.
Well, Rich was, yeah.
No, we actually, I started fighting in the UFC. My first UFC fight was in 98. And he actually walked off of his job and decided to do, I think, magic and his
other. Yeah, that's when I decided to do magic full time.
In 98, too. So it's kind of an interesting start to both of our careers.
And did you, like, see each other across the way at a party and you were like, we both have kind eyes, we both have sweet smiles.
I didn't want to beat him up the first time I met him, because
yeah.
he does some tricks that make me piss me off because I can't figure him out.
So it makes you feel stupid. Are you one of those guys?
No, no, not at all. I don't do those. No. They're more like
getting stupid,
his head.
They're really good. I mean, it's like, okay.
It blows your mind.
It's like, yeah, it's like, okay, there's no way. No, I don't get that. No,
yeah.
You can't, because usually I figure out, okay, I can figure out he had a chance to do this, he had a chance to do that.
Right.
I get it. You know, I can figure it out. I can figure out. I don't know how they do it, but I know it's. I kind of have an idea.
Right.
He's done a few tricks. I'm like, really? Like, okay, I have no idea how he did that.
Oh, so that makes you mad that you can't figure it out?
Yeah, that gets me.
You got to cut yourself some slack, though. The fact that you can't figure out magic is like most people, right?
I know.
I just love the idea of Chuck losing sleep over some tricks that you've done in the past, where he's just like, God damn it! Like, I need to know.
Chuck's reaction to magic, for some, not all, man. He's a great guy, but like, there's some tricks where they're getting your head. And there's no reason the trick should work. There's no reason. It's not like a card trick where you're like, okay, you did something with the card.
Mm.
It's just like, think of anyone in the world. Now, pick anyone in this room. The person you're thinking of is going to have a tattoo of that person's name. You're like, how the F? Well, it makes no sense. Like, it just makes no sense.
Wow.
So there's some tricks where it makes him like kind of cringe and go, I'm done. I'm going to go in the shade under this tree and hide. Like, I did an NFL party one time, a Hall of Fame party, and gigantic, huge, gnarly dudes running like little children. It's like, what? And it's like, it just makes people freak out. It's not like, oh, I can't figure out how you switch the card. It's more like, how did you get in my head?
It's mind-blowing. Is that what you aspire to, like, when you start doing magic? Like, is that what every magician wants, is to be able to make people go, I have no freaking idea how you did that?
I really don't know. I got into it so late by accident, man, because I was a body language nut my whole life. I didn't learn to read till I was 11 and a half years old. So I got a really weird start to life. So I have always had a fascination with human behavior and watching people, figuring people out. So magic lets me do that. Magic's a tool to let me approach you to mess with you. So most magicians, I think, like, do it to hit on chicks, maybe, or
really?
Get attention.
Well, yeah, that book you
know,
right?
Well, yeah, there's that. But that was marketing, man. That was marketing.
That was a great book.
That was just marketing.
What's the book?
It's stupid. It's just... We're allowed to talk about it.
Yeah,
it's a book called Tricks to Pick Up Chicks, but it's not. It's a pun. It's actually not Tricks to Pick Up Chicks, like those dating books, like the seduction books. It's really like bar bets and magic tricks, like tricks, magic tricks
to pick.
It's just a rhyming title. And now I've gotten some backlash because of, you know, the Me Too movement. People are like, oh, that's one of those seduction books. I'm like, no, it's just magic tricks.
It's just magic tricks. It's just funny.
So Tricks to Pick Up Chicks.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah,
coincidentally, I wrote a book when I was 10 called Chicks with Dicks and Magic Tricks. So it was a different take on just the whole, it was a different time. But, okay, so are you into magic as a kid? Because I was, you okay, you weren't.
No.
I feel like most kids... Or people that get into it were at, like, I have a friend, Justin Willman, who I think, you know.
Oh, I know Justin. Yeah.
He's got into it pretty early. And
just incredible.
Just incredible, yeah. Like, my mom bought me a magic book that was, like, one of those, you turn the page at the top, and it's, like, full, then you turn it from the middle. And, by the way, this is not what people know, but this is the trick for the person flipping the book. And you flip it from the middle, it's all, the colors are gone, then you flip it from the bottom, and it's completely blank, right? And then she got me those basic tricks from the magic shop in Seattle. And it was pretty quick, I think you know, and maybe you could attest to this, whether you have the mental fortitude or the patience or the interest in it right away.
Kind of.
Okay.
What I have found in magic, there's an element to magic that's got psychology and human behavior, interaction, timing, opportunity, pickpocketing, all that. Like that's the world of quality magic where you're going to manipulate the situation and control the situation, push the situation. That's the good stuff. Magic tricks is that bridge at the beginning that once you learn a magic trick, there's not much to it, but when you're doing a magic trick, you at least need to know, can I approach a person and try to get away with a trick at all? Can I be entertaining? That's what a magic trick does for you.
Gotcha.
And then if you get to the next level, then the world opens up. Okay. Trust me on that.
That's pickpocketing. So I made the mistake of saying around him at a party, at one of my parties, well, I don't think people, I got a big kid stands a wallet, it's in my front pocket. I don't think, I'd be real hard to pickpocket.
Yeah.
Right? I made the mistake of saying that to him, this ass. He pickpocketed me, put his card in my wallet, and put it back in my pocket.
Card he signed. Card he signed.
Well, in your defense, those were strong roofies he gave you, and so you were out for a couple hours.
You're right. Yeah, no, it was a kid's party. I wasn't even drinking. Yeah. I heard an excuse.
That's crazy.
Yeah, he pickpocketed me and put my wallet, took it out, put his card in, and put it in.
I mean, that to me might even be more impressive than doing certain magic tricks.
Well, that's the thing. It's the element of, the how is it even possible. It's not, the moving parts are, linking rings. People are like, is there an opening in it? A girl vanishes on the box. It's like, how did you crawl out? How does it do it? When it comes to, the interactive part, it's opportunity-based. And so, there's no rhyme and reason it should work. How could you take a watch off? How could I not feel that?
Yeah.
Everyone tells me, you could never do it to me. I've seen guys on stage do that. You could never do it to me. I'm like, really? Because I did it a few minutes ago. And they're like, son of a bitch! And it pisses them off because they're so certain it can't happen to them. Yeah.
So you weren't into it as a kid.
I wasn't. I didn't have much of a childhood when it came to exposure to things like that. But then I got adopted, moved to San Luis Obispo, where I was living kind of near Chuck. And then I discovered magic kind of by accident in my mid-20s. I was dabbling in hypnosis a little bit because I'm always fascinated by human behavior.
An early age?
Take a kid who has never read, never went to school. I just was this blank slate who just looked at people and observed the world around me.
Until 11?
Until I was 11. I got discovered at 11, taken out of my environment, put in protective services because my childhood was nuts. And then I was adopted soon after, adopted at 12. And then I moved to San Luis Obispo. So not going to school, not reading, not having parents, it really wired me a certain way. So I'm freakishly observant. I've always used that skill in my magic and in life.
It's amazing.
It's common sense kind of stuff, street smarts. And I have zero book smarts, and I have a master's in street smarts is what I like to say. And so body language for me is the same thing. People have studied body language, and they read about body language, they read about cells and influence and persuasion, and it's missing all of the good stuff, which is the common sense approach to it. And that's what I do. So I did that before magic. So through the back door, I discovered magic when I was 26 or so. And I was like, that's cool. What a cool way to go up to somebody and use right and left brain conflict or do these techniques to be able to manipulate the situation live. Magic's not a better tool to do that because you have the permission to come up to them. Say you want to try something and then you just start doing shit to people. Mm. Magic lets you get into that to bridge that gap. Otherwise, it'd be weird if I just went up to people and be like, mind if I just touch you? Strangely, so magic lets you.
He tries that all the time.
Yeah. So magic's a good tool or vessel for that, for sure.
It's kind of amazing that you became super observant as a kid. When I guess if you didn't have any structure, right? And you didn't know how to read and you, like you said, were a blank slate, then, there's no reason why you wouldn't have gone down a darker hole of, I don't know, even at 10. Kids get into weird shit, right? You could have.
A lot of kids my age were getting into deep shit already.
Totally.
Salinas, California.
Oh, wow.
It's bad. Yeah.
So the fact that you just kind of said, all right, well, what can I control? What can I pick up? What can I get good at or learn or just, use that I don't need teaching? Because to be, observant of people and human behaviors, that's not something you need to. You just need to do it, right? And be open to it and, interested in people. Is that a part of it? You just had a genuine interest in.
I did out of survival instincts, probably. Honestly, being a step ahead of people, but it helps me in life, helps me in magic, helps me in everything, sales, whatever it might be. And that's what I had that epiphany years ago because I do mostly corporate magic. And I did, and at the end of every event, you'd be a crowd of CEOs around me like, okay, so if I'm playing poker, what's a couple tricks, you know, or how do I manipulate my wife, or how do I do that? I mean, the amount of conversations I would have at the end of like a 4-hour like corporate party, it always would veer towards psychology because the magic tricks I did veered towards psychology, and it would just be the conversation starter at the end of the night. They'd be like, tell me another trick or do this thing. But then it always, I mean, most of the time it would end up with some guy saying, okay, so when I'm playing poker, if I'm trying to sell cars, or if I'm trying to negotiate with someone, what are some tells? And they just knew from the vibe of my magic that I would be into that, and we'd talk for hours. I'd be at parties 3-4 hours after they'd be shut down, just talking to people about body language. So six years ago, I decided I'm gonna go that route and teach the skills I have that I use in my magic to control people and let you learn it from a very unique perspective, because I'm self-taught from the street smarts angle of body language.
Wow.
It's all about applied psychology. I studied psychology in college, and there's theoretical psychology and the stuff you read in books, but that doesn't really have much of a place in how's it going to help you make money in sales? How's it going to help you in negotiations? Yeah, here's these terminologies, and this means someone's sad and all this stuff. So what? What are you going to do about it? And that's where I get fired up. It's like, well, let me show you how to test for what someone's really thinking or what their motive might be, if they're fearful of a situation, how to test for that, and how to run with that intel with the correct framework or strategy you develop right then live based on the intel you get.
Wow.
Because in body language books, you learn basic body language based on data. If someone's grimacing, they're mad. So what? What are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
You don't know.
Yeah.
No one knows. And that's what's missing with anything when it comes to any book on body language. So that's why me as an entertainer and a magician, like those worlds kind of collided through conversations I had with so many people in business, realizing that here's CEOs of marketing companies. They know all about human behavior and influence and persuasion, but they don't, you know, and I talked for 5 minutes and I was like, oh my gosh, you know, so that's kind of what kind of led to the direction I'm going in now.
What came first, the interest in entertainment or like wanting to help people? Because clearly it seems like that's now a true focus.
I don't know.
But even in entertainment, right? Like all of us wanted to, at some point of what we're doing, we love it, but, you know, we're all, you know, attracted to the idea of like putting on a show, right?
I guess. I mean, I was extremely shy. I was not the guy in class. Get me in front of the class and talk, do a speech. Like,
oh, really?
That's the class I would fail. Like, I hated getting in front of people.
Were you that way, Chuck?
I was like 25, 26.
Oh, I was, no, I wasn't a guy. I wasn't a good speech guy.
Yeah.
No, I didn't,
you didn't like to be in front of the class or do.
I wasn't big on, and I always said I wanted to fight. I love fighting. But
right.
I didn't want to be an entertainer. I grew to like entertaining.
Yeah.
Even now.
Yeah.
You know, I think it grew on me.
Yeah.
You know, it's being an entertainer.
Some people do it because they want the attention.
Yeah.
And some people do it because it's in their soul. You know, there's a difference. Like, mm-hmm. when I discovered magic, that switch went off. I'm like, this is really cool. People like this.
Yeah.
Like, they dig it.
Was there one night or trick where you started to kind of get into a flow where you saw a response where you're like, holy shit.
Dude, this is a true story.
Yes.
So I met a magician. I was working with a hypnotist to help develop his shows because he was a hypnotherapist, helping people quit smoking and this kind of stuff. And I said to my buddy, I was like, why don't you do hypnosis shows and make a lot more money?
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, no, my clients need to trust me. You know, I don't want them to think I'm going to make them quack like a chicken and all that stuff. I'm like, but that's on stage at a corporate event. That's not in your clinical situation here. You know, like, I'm like, I don't know anything about your industry, dude. I know a lot about human behavior. I'll tell you what, if I was going to hire you as a clinical hypnotherapist and I saw that you had DVDs and books and also did shows, I would think you're the pro, not the guy who only does hypnotherapy.
Yeah.
And he goes, huh. Never really thought. So I've used his own technique of NLP and framework against him. And he goes, that's pretty brilliant. So we started doing hypnosis shows and I designed the props, all the sound, you know, and I kind of ran the show.
Wow.
Well, I would warm the audience up with techniques about human behavior and how the mind is easily influenced. And so I was like, this is really effing cool. So I started getting that buzz with him. Then I met a magician who taught me some stuff like how to take a watch off someone, like the good, fun magic, right? So the very first time I performed magic, there was a lady at this yacht club in San Luis Obispo, Avila Beach. And I just was like, I'm just gonna go for it. Like, hey, do me a favor, hold this coin. And I gave her a coin in her hand and I took her wrist, I did the technique and I made her look at me and I did the whole thing where I controlled her thoughts and the watch came off and I'm like, son of a bitch, the watch is in my hand. What do I do with this? Holy crap.
Shit.
I put it in my back pocket. I said, now, you remember the coin was heads, right? Look at your hand now. Now it's tails. She opens up her hand. She's like, I don't think it changed. I'm like, you don't remember it was heads? And now she's confused. She's like, well, you know what? As a souvenir, and I didn't even know what to do. I didn't know how to dress the trick. I just kind of went for it. So I pulled the watch out. I'm like, well, I did take your watch. And she was like, what the? And she flipped out. First time I ever did a trick. It was taking a watch off this lady. And I was just like, this is, I mean, I was like buzzing. I was like, this is freaking incredible. What can I do next? You know? Yeah. And so that was when I got hooked. When I was like 26 or 27, I started dabbling in it.
Did you go out like and just steal a car just to ride the high? Like you were like, no, I gotta do something to top that. Like,
no. I did kill a few people. Yeah. Really fun. If you need, call me.
Yeah, if you need a guy.
No. So I got hooked very quickly with that interactive kind of magic.
Yep.
I never did a magic trick where it's like, here's a prop, here's a gizmo, here's a thing, let me present it to you and pretend I'm doing it. It was always some sort of interaction experience, you know? And so I was hooked, man. And so I started practicing it, and a year later I quit UPS and became a magician full time.
Yeah, that's what Chuck was saying. Yeah. You were,
I just loved it. I loved
his UPS guy for a little bit. Yeah.
For like a minute. Yeah.
For a minute, yeah.
Yeah.
Would you do it? I'm sure this is, I know Chuck gets.
I think we realized that long after we've been friends.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, he backtracked and he's like, well, yeah.
I
did this route.
Chuck, I know you get people to ask you, like, to put you in headlocks and shit like that, right? For, like, you know, or punch.
Punch them, yeah.
Punch people, right? Which is crazy. Yeah. I got people to, you know, hey, tell me a joke, stuff like that, you know, being a comic.
Oh, you're funny?
No, but I get paid to pretend to be.
Oh.
Yeah. okay. It's always good in a podcast. You want to leave with less self-esteem than when you came in with. So I appreciate that, Rich. Do you get people that when you start to get going, like how quickly does the, hey, do a trick for me? And I'm always curious with magicians, like, are you like, oh, it's a good practice, like to get a rep, like, you know, if you're doing close-up stuff or you're at a party, you're like, oh, this is a way for me to practice versus like if I'm at a party and someone's like, tell me a joke, I'm like, well, I need like the stage, the mic, like there's other elements, but is there benefit in doing that, or do you get annoyed?
100%. Yeah, okay. No, I did it nonstop at the bars downtown, hanging out with friends. I would just walk around and I would just look for, like, I'm going to try this thing with a cell phone today. I'm just going to make up an idea.
Yeah,
nonstop. And it's just like little opportunity-based things, you know? And how can I get my photo on their phone with me holding a card, but then get you to think of a card and then have you get ready to take me a picture? I'm like, wait, go to your camera roll. And there's already a picture of me holding your card standing where I knew you were going to take the picture. You know, it's a lot of pre-work.
Holy
but then they're
shit.
Like, how? I didn't take the picture yet. Whoa, and it's my card. Well, it's like they don't know that I swiped their phone. I took a picture. I posed with the card that I forced on you. You thought it was free choice, but then you take the photo. And it's like, it's all this circus. All just to get you to freak out, you know? And it's all it is. It's like, it's not really that.
Are we even doing this podcast right now? Or am I in a bubble bath with pop?
We're in a motorhome.
Like,
next stop.
Yeah. Next stop, we're taking your kidneys.
But it is, you're right. Though,
next stop, kidney removal. Yeah.
Yeah. The practice is great. The practice is good because it's just like learning Spanish. You can study it in a book all you want. Go to Mexico for a year. You're going to be fluent, right? So me practicing magic in my head is one thing. Creating is one thing. Going out and doing it to somebody, it doesn't get better than that.
Yeah.
You got to practice it. You have to.
Wow. Yeah. That, aren't you just like, to even have your brain be wired in a way to think like what you just spelled out for us, like thinking of taking the picture, getting him to think, pushing the card on him. I mean, that's a level of mind control, right? And manipulating.
It's a little bit of everything. It's controlling the environment, controlling the timing, controlling the pace, controlling the mechanics of the cards, controlling a little bit of everything, and just hoping to God it works out.
And being likable, yeah. I'll say that, right? For what you do. Like, you also, I'm very impressed by your ability to be as, like, you know, contained and decisive and articulate with all your choices and movements, but it's like, you seem like a very chill, normal dude.
I think
that helps, because if you're, except for the little twitch you just had right there, but yeah, other than that, like, you have it, yeah.
Bob, stop.
But, yeah, other than talking to people in your head, like, you're very normal. No, but that's a real, I think that helps because you want to seem relatable and chill and not be so showy, right? So that people kind of let their guard down and just kind
of
talk to you as a...
It depends on the kind of show, yeah. If you're doing, like, interactive magic, it really helps to be one of them.
Be personable, yeah.
Be personable. If you're on stage,
you're putting on a show.
The sky's the limit. You're doing a show. It's not, you're not interacting as much.
Were there people you looked up to magic-wise, or did you just, like, want to be in your own lane? And we're all influenced by somebody,
I've been
right?
in my own lane because I started so late. But by the time I was probably 32, 33, I started really rubbing elbows with the top guys around the world because it's a small community.
Yeah.
And there's just different guys, you know, Cyril from Japan and my buddy Andrew from LA. There's just guys that are just, I mean, I introduced you one time to my buddy Andrew, and I was not joking. I introduced him to Andrew. I said, he's one of the best magicians on the planet. And I'm not just like, you know, belittling the guy or trying to make Andrew look impressive in front of Chakra, but it was like, I'm blown away at this guy.
Wow.
And so there's a few people, but those are people I met just through my camaraderie that we...
I throw down. He's impressive.
Yeah.
We went to the Magic Castle a few times. We got to see people, and it's funny. I mean, it's fun to watch magicians, like, crack. They're doing a show, and they see Chuck. They're like, oh, shit, Chuck.
Yeah.
Dildell's here. And then they're doing their thing, and then they see me next to him, and they're like, And they freeze, like, oh, that one guy, he's like, stop the show. He's like, Rich, do you want to come up and show some tricks to people? I'm like, nope.
Whoa.
Your stage, man. Like, what are you doing? Like,
yeah, what are you doing?
Let's see your show.
Like, yeah.
We came to see your show.
Yeah,
that's kind of flattering, though, in a weird way, but also. Okay, so the public speaking, first of all, I just want to go through, I don't know how often you think about your accolades, but some career highlights of Rich Ferguson. The 2007 NBC Phenomenon finalist, the 2008 Best Entertainer, 2004 Magic Castle Gold Medal, 2005 Grand Champion Magician Nominee, 40 Under 40 Business Award, 20 Under 40 Business Award, 2008 Trick of the Year. Trick of the Year.
That's for stripping and prostitution. That's totally different.
Well played. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
Okay,
how
there is a shot of you in a onesie with a thong.
Yeah, I think it's
a thong.
Amazing.
Could be some spaghetti. Yeah. Your feature on the
stole it. Can I have it back, please?
That's why you're here, Rich. You've been featured on the front page of the New York Times, Pacific Coast Business Times, San Luis Obispo, Tribune. Showcases chip tricks and card handling skills at the World Series of Poker in 2006. Talk about that for a minute.
World Series of Poker?
Yeah.
So I went on tour with a company called Full Tilt Poker. And fulltiltpoker.com and .net were different. One was like illegal in the U.S. and one isn't. So it's like a whole like legalities. But so I toured around with them, mostly in Europe, Germany and Switzerland and places. We did these big, massive tournaments of 8,000, 10,000 people. And that was the time I'm performing magic. I'm at the height of my career. And they have me up on these massive jumbo screens doing magic to like a German crowd. You know, I'm thinking about it, you know, it's like all this stuff. And I don't know what anyone's saying. Good luck. Good thing they all speak English too, you know, which is really cool. So I'm up there doing basically gambling demonstrations and card tricks and body language kind of stuff, but poker chip stuff as well, on these massive, massive screens for crowds like the Staples Center. It was an incredible experience. So they just brought me in because they knew I was writing for Bluff Magazine at the time, doing some just poker chip stuff and body image stuff. And then I had some DVDs come out around that time on that industry, the card handling and stuff. And it just kind of one thing led to another. So then it just kind of one thing led to another. And here I am in Europe just sitting at tables with all these poker stars and we're just touring around doing our thing. And that
seems like a natural progression at some point to be that dialed into just human behavior and mind. Not my control, but just being able to, again, like we said, kind of, you know, persuade people or manipulate how they think. So, yeah, of course,
But even the opposite of that, instead of just persuading them, sitting back and doing nothing and just watching is the best.
And watching them make choices based on you not doing anything.
I don't exist at a poker table. And I'm just watching people. This girl here's chewing her gum. Hands come around and all of a sudden chews faster. Or all of a sudden she stops chewing.
Holy shit.
She stops chewing, she's bluffing. 100%. She doesn't want to be seen. She doesn't want to exist. She's like, don't call. She wants to freeze. She stops chewing her gum. So I turn to this girl, I'm like, so you know you stop chewing every time you bluff? I bet she never chews a gum anymore. Like it's just looking for it's more about being a Sherlock Holmes and just looking for clues.
How do you do that and focus on your own hand though? You're just able to
No secret?
Yeah.
So here's what I do when I play with my buddies. I've done this for 10 years. Pocket cards. If you don't play poker, you get a couple cards dealt to you, and then you share the rest of the cards at the table. And so I get my pocket cards, and I lift them up. I don't even lift them up. I don't even look at my cards. I shadow lift. I lift up the corner, but don't lift them, and I stare right at the table. And all I'm doing is watching the table, and I'm looking for anyone else that looks at their cards who, like, sit up a little taller or hold their cards a little closer. 99% of the time, those are fantastic cards, good starting cards, because they're engaging, they're protecting. So they're exhibiting subconscious tells that let me know they love what they just saw. Or I'm looking for the guy who looks at the cards, and I see two people. Typically, one buddy, Greg of mine, every time he had his cards, he would just sit back and shove his cards forward about a foot. He's going to fold as long as no one bets. He's going to stick around, but if someone bets even a penny, he's going to throw his cards away. He's got crap.
Yeah.
So it's just looking for that shift of behavior, and that's all I would do. I never looked at my cards until I was bet into or if my turn to act. Why do I need to? I don't need to know my cards yet. I need to know what your cards are. That's what I need to know. So I just look at it differently. It's like those are all opportunities for me to watch you. Why do I need to waste my time looking at my cards? I don't know. I don't need to know yet.
Does Chuck have a tell? Have you played with Chuck? I feel like Chuck.
I probably have a million.
Yeah.
I
feel like you just
really
start giggling
played.
Like a little kid.
We haven't played.
We haven't really played.
Not
we hang out with.
I don't have that. I don't think I have the patience for poker.
Like Chuck, show me your face if you had a royal flush. Yeah, see, that's what I'm talking about. See, that's just fucking me. You fall apart.
All right, all right. I'll probably make them.
Yeah. I don't know. So there's the other thing too. We can talk about body language in a minute, but I'm telling you, man, all that wrapped in all, every aspect of my childhood, magic, poker, my whole entire life, all of it had one common thread: human behavior. Every single thing. Because I don't do magic tricks. I do human behavior dressed up with tricks, you know? And so body language is like amazing. So like Chuck, you're saying, what's his tell? He doesn't know his tell. But I'll tell you what, if he was betting, he said, let's put $1 million on the line. Now he's going to exhibit some tells because we just put in a stress factor.
Right.
Now there's something at risk.
Like I was in the World Series of Poker in 2007 and like, I was actually...
We get after, it, you're famous.
No. After 2 hours, I just wanted to leave because I couldn't come back the next day because I had to go to training camp. On Monday, I couldn't make the next day.
Okay.
The next day didn't matter. I couldn't come back.
Right.
But I was being paid to be there. Right. So after two, they said we'll play for 2 hours and we don't care after that because I was on the main table. Right. So I'm playing against a good guy and I'm just like, I'm looking at him going, look, I got it. I'm not. I'm trying to go out. I went all in. Put this big bet in with when I thought I wasn't getting. I got it on the last card. I got it. Just don't stay away.
Yeah.
And he thought I was just. I'm trying to go home. I told him I'm trying to go home. I don't want to be.
This guy gets so honest. Like, yeah. like a shark.
Just exactly.
That's what I want to. I just destroyed one. I was a pretty good player.
And you got a lucky hand. You had the turn of the river.
Yeah, it was like I was playing 8-2. I was trying to get out of there.
Wow.
I got a pair of eights, a pair of twos.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Wow.
So,
it happens.
Oops.
Yeah.
But like I said, like they're trying to read me, and I didn't want to be there.
Well, I'm sure that applies to fighting as well, right? Like just, I mean, let's shift the...
You know, Forrest was playing in that same one, compared to being there. He hadn't looked at his cards yet. He wasn't looking at his cards, didn't really know how to play, so he was just compared to being there. Didn't look at his cards, he was, for a minute, he was like the chip leader.
Jesus. if you double up by accident a couple times, you're in the lead. I mean,
simple. He got lucky a couple times.
Wow.
But he was like, I wasn't looking at my cards, I didn't know what you're supposed to...
That's so funny.
Well, tell me this right out of the gate, like the gum chewing thing is a fun tell, but like, so how observant are you? Are you taking in every player right out of the gate, like trying to pick up on their tells?
I mean, if we're gonna talk about poker, there's so many fundamentals to it, but like, you sit at the table, you evaluate how people are.
Yeah.
Like you and I are kind of relaxed, fun. You're kind of like, you know, kind of funny, and he sits with his legs across. He's kind of, you know, he's got a certain way about him. I'm sitting like this, but like, I'm like an airplane. I'm not the guy who takes up both armrests.
Yeah.
Some people naturally do, so they're just a little bit more cocky, and so they're going to play cocky. So there's little baselines of like, okay, this guy's an ass, he's going to play like an ass. This guy's reserved, he's going to be a little reserved. So sometimes a reserved guy can be sneaky. They're intelligent people. They
totally.
Know math. So you have to evaluate the people. But then it comes to the shifts of behavior. You watch people, and you see when they fold, if their feet go forward, they're, you know, which is usually a sign of comfort, which is something they would do when they like their card. So you start to see these like things that start to exhibit. You're looking for the change. Like, I don't care if you sit there a certain way. I really don't care. But if you shift during a stimulus, like someone raises and you watch this person now gets hot and heavy or starts to go, I don't know, and all, it's a bunch of song and dance, I'm going to pay attention to those kind of things, because if the song and dance matches what I believe it is, which means it's all bullshit, his cards are fantastic, because that's all acting, he knows he's doing it, he's aware he's doing it,
right.
So therefore I'm going to bank on the opposite. So I'm going to pay attention to moments like that. But in general, I don't pay attention to everything because it's so misleading.
Totally.
But it's the big shifts of behavior based on when there's a stimulus.
Yeah.
That's key, man. And that's the same in dating, poker, negotiations, hiring, firing, sales, especially in sales. You're trying to get lead generation. You don't know if the guy's just going to waste your time. They want to just go shopping for houses, and they're telling you one thing, but I can look at them in 2 seconds and be like, yeah, they're wasting my time, versus, no, this guy's serious, you know? So, like, there's a lot of value in it, too. So, wow. I mean, poker, like, we could talk about it for hours.
Yeah, the acting part is definitely real. I remember the few times I got to play in some charity things, I definitely tried to, because I'm not a great player, I was like, all right, I'm going to really... you know, turn up the acting chops and try to, you know, mislead people into certain, and it would work on quite a few hands. And then people started kind of pick up on that. I just didn't really know what I was doing too much. And I was kind of going in on hands when I shouldn't and trying to kind of, you know, bluff people.
You got a bit better chance to, like, for me, like, at least it's like the blinds move a lot faster. So it gives me a better chance to compete because my patience doesn't.
You're right. It's a grind, man, that lifestyle. That's why I never did it professionally. It's not my thing. I'd rather go get paid thousands of dollars to just douse you with card tricks and move on. Like, it's just not a lifestyle I prefer, but I love the game. I love Texas Hold'em because, you know, when one hand of poker, you got 5, 6, 7 times to bluff, lie, cheat, tells, and it's like you're just honing in on these skills over and over and over, just like performing magic. I'm doing magic live to people. I can't afford to mess up. So I got to reel in my mistakes and test the water so much to make the trick work, or a variation of the trick work. So like, you have to be on. You start to learn the rhythm of human behavior really, really well.
How have you handled, I guess, hecklers? Like the way a comedian went on stage, or if Chuck's in the ring and people are screaming out, you know, obscenities that he might, you know, one might trigger something, you know, from the childhood or something.
Right.
Like if you have somebody at a party that's like, bullshit, or just being an asshole.
Right.
Or like,
Can I use my cards?
Yeah, how,
like,
do you, I mean, that's...
Can I fuck your wife with my dick? Like, there's a million answers to this. Like, well, I mean, there's so many answers. Like, do you want to play this game? Like, come on, dude. Like, you want to come up stage and show us a really shitty trick? Let's go. I got 5 minutes.
Totally.
Let's drink some water. Like, I'll take prisoners when I perform. Man.
Wow.
I'm not like Andrew Dice Clay. I'm a very clean performer and very funny. But if someone's going to be, like, blatantly rude.
Yes.
That's different than a heckler.
Yes.
But, like, someone's going to be rude, like, to that degree. Like, oh, let me see what you got in your pockets and all. I'm like, you're interrupting the flow, dude. I was about to do a thing. Now I can't because your eyes were all focused. I've been leading you guys a certain direction. And I'm saying, what was it again? What your name was? And I'm doing this thing where I'm drawing attention to one spot and the guy makes you all look at the table. The trick's over. I mean, literally.
So, will you say that?
No, that for me, the trick is over. I got to start over. People don't know that because I'm building up a scenario to make something happen.
He does a really good job. Like, you're going, okay, wait, and you figure out that, wait, that didn't work. Oh, wait, that wasn't the main trick he was doing.
Right.
There's a lot of misdirection in that.
Misdirection where you're like, okay, it's like, messed up. But can you... Like,
yeah, you'll start over.
He's talking about
a purposeful
mess up.
Like, oh, your card.
Give me a dollar bill. We'll try a different trick. You reach in your pocket and the dollar bill's missing, but the thing that you, that was like the card you signed, is actually there instead. That's weird. Yeah, and my deck of cards is your money. My bad. Like, I don't know how.
Those are my favorite.
So those are,
that's what I'm saying.
That's awesome.
But yeah,
purposeful accident.
So you do comedy.
Yeah.
So hecklers for you is probably different than me, because my stuff's very much like I need to control these moments to really fine-tune control. So if someone is a heckler, for me, I have an advantage as a body language guy, because I can go up to a crowd, like at a CEO party, and I go up to this one table, and I'm watching people, literally watching feet, and I'll see that feet are all angling. Like in our group, they might all be going toward Chuck, because he's the ringleader, let's say, right? So I'm like, this is the guy I got to get on my side right now. When I walk up, how you guys doing? Hey, you want to try something really? Come here. He's like, we're going to fuck over your friends. This is what we're going to do. And like, he's on my side instantly. Right? Or I'm going to take him down if I see he's the controlling one and people are paying attention to him, but from a controlling, cocky standpoint, and they're kind of like, God, I wish I had a break from this guy. I will take him down. I will crush him. I will do a trick.
Man.
I will do a trick where he thinks he got me, and then it's one of those ones at the end where it's like, you know, there's a punchline, and everyone's laughing, and they have no choice but be like, dude, he got you good. He will never mess with me the rest of the night. So, like, there's two ways to deal with it, and
that's
I can evaluate
amazing.
That by just watching the crowd who's in charge, and I need to get that guy on my side right now.
It's like looking at the lunch table in elementary school, right? You see who's kind of like king of the table, the kids that are kind of like stealing lunch or what. I mean, in any social situation, there are those levels, right, of like who's king of the table, who's there, who's kind of the chatty one, who's sitting in the on the sidelines. Does that, I mean, that's got to be really gratifying to do that in at a party or an event where
I mean, it's a skill, but it's not always happening that way. Sometimes just people are just, oh, Richard, come to our table, and I just show up and I do my thing, and it's great. I'm just like open arms, but sometimes you run into that.
What was the trick of the year, do you mind saying, or that you won for? Because that's a big honor, I feel like.
There was a trick I created. So a lot of magicians create, like your buddy Justin, we all create things, give it to the magic community and people use it and stuff.
Cool.
There was one trick called, I think it's called Tagged, but it's a series of tricks. It's like, it's a system. And it's a system, like, you know, about pickpocketing we talked about earlier. There's also a technique in magic called put pocketing. Like, what was your name again? And I touch you like this, but I throw a coin in your pocket. So it's like putting stuff there that I'm going to use in a trick later, or putting a fork, or putting stuff in you or on you that I'm going to utilize later in a trick that you don't know is there. So it's put pocketing, the opposite of pickpocketing. And so I had this stupid idea in 2004, probably. I was like, what if, because predictions, like if you're doing mind reading, think of a person right now, don't tell me what it is. And if it was just written on the wall, that's cool. But what if, like, I had a picture right here on the table? I said, think of anyone in the world. And you're like, is it a celebrity? You're like, yeah. Is it a female celebrity? You're like, yeah. Supermodel? Yeah. And I turned over a picture that's been here the whole time. That'd blow your mind.
Yeah.
So when it comes to mental magic, the prediction, the reveal is kind of like, that's the crescendo. That's the punchline. Gotcha. So I did this thing in Vegas where I had words appear on vehicles in the street when people were thinking of words. I think of a word, you got one? I'm like, send it to me. I'm going to catch it. Oh, I missed. Oh, it's on that bus. And it's like literally the word the person's thinking of is on a bus, like that kind of stuff. So then I had this trick that I sold to the magic community, which was a really simple system, really, but it's how to do various ways to gather or push words on people, but then have it appear on them. Mm. So you saw me do that at one of the parties, I'm sure, where you think of a word, and then the word is tattooed on you. It's just so weird because there's no reason it would happen,
right?
But it's shocking, and here's why. Because there's a right and left brain conflict. The one hemisphere of your brain, depending on which dominant you are, one part of the brain is like, whoa, how did he get my word?
Mm-hmm.
The other part is, I'm trying to understand how did it get on you? Mm-hmm. And they compete. And I've had that trick happen where people, they like shudder. They like, they literally, they spasm because they don't, both are firing so hard that both hemispheres are fighting for information. And they don't know what to do. And so that's why it's a powerful trick. Not because the trick's so great.
Right.
It's a cool trick, but it's like, it makes people shut down. It's wild.
Motivational speaking, right? Have you been to any of his motivational speaking seminars, conferences?
I doubt it. No, I haven't.
Did you know he did that?
Yeah, I did. I know he does.
Surprise? No? Not at all, right?
No, he's
I feel like from the get-go you've had that in your pocket to be able to inspire without even trying.
No, man.
What kind of, got you interested in that?
Well, when I was in my 20s, I volunteered a lot for like AmeriCorps, Big Brothers, Big Sisters.
Oh, wow.
I ended up speaking at some events about my childhood because it's very unusual, and that kind of was the first time I ever did that, and it wasn't my bag, but it really seemed to have touched some at-risk youth, and I was like, this is cool. So I did that a lot when I was in my 30s, and then, like I said, performing corporate magic for so long, at the end of the night people always talking to me about psychology, and it kind of led toward this thing. So I started developing a seminar a few years ago and then a keynote, and so it's only been a handful of years that I've been doing that, and that's kind of the direction I want to go now. Because as a magician, I could do things in my program that makes it really memorable and fun, versus just me telling you dry, raw data about body language and statistics. It's like, it's kind of like it's education, but when you have magic in it that I use as analogies or to get your attention or make it fun or memorable, it's like the best of both worlds, you know?
Yeah, that's
just
huge.
Like, yeah.
Those things just keep people interested and probably make them remember the things you're talking about more so.
Yeah, their takeaways are great, because I mean, I've only done 2 full-blown corporate retreats, no, 3 now. And I'm doing a keynote next month.
Yeah, that's right.
So this is the direction I'm going full time now, and it's so fascinating because I can do magic in it. I still get that magic fulfillment, but I'm not just the magician on stage. Mm-hmm. I'm now educating people with all these techniques I've gathered over the years, and I've stripped it all down to here's what works. Period. It works. You know, there's like 1,000 different types of kicks. There's a few that really work. You know, it's the same kind of thing. It's like, I'm not going to teach you all this definition and all these theories and like what psychology could or couldn't mean based on your childhood or whatever. That's really doesn't have a place in negotiating somebody, knowing if
the
they're
basis,
trying to manipulate you,
right,
or how to influence them in sales, so, or in poker or dating, whatever it might be. So I've stripped it all down to just raw, actionable information.
You mentioned
actionable.
Yeah. Body language in, let's just say, dating in specifically. What if you're trying to give somebody tips on that, where do you even start? I mean, because I'm sure there's a lot of dudes listening to this, gals too maybe, that aren't as comfy in their own skin as they would like to be.
Yep. 4 minutes.
Yeah.
3 minutes. Give me 3 minutes.
Yes.
I will break down the entire basis of body language and how people are doing it wrong, everything you've ever studied, and how you can focus on an area of body language people miss and do it right. It'll completely change a lot of viewers' lives. I swear to you. Poker, dating, negotiation, sales, whatever it is. We don't have time to go into all the different techniques of influence in NLP and all the different little things to look for, the tells, but I will show you the framework in just a couple minutes, okay? So think about this. Body language. What is there? There's all these millions of things, right? Millions of tells and gestures, micro-expressions, and all this psychology. There's only 2 things that happen in body language to start with. Either a static thing or a non-static thing, a shift of behavior. We've talked about shifts of behavior already. Static would be like you walk into a room, you walk up to a girl, I'm talking about dating, you walk into a girl, up to a girl, and her arms are crossed. So, you didn't do it. It was already there. That's static, right? Static.
Yeah.
The opposite is she's talking to you like this, you're like, yeah, can I get your number? She goes, oh, and her arms cross, her legs retreat, all these signs that say run for my freaking life, but her face does all the acting, goes, oh, absolutely, oh my God, I just, yeah, it's 8:05, and she just lights up like, yeah, we should get together sometime. That's just because she needs to. She's doing that out of a conscious decision.
She gave you a fake number.
The body language is what you're looking for. The shift of behavior. Her going from this, from not hands crossed, for those listening, arms are not crossed. A shift of behavior would be you drop in a stimulus, some intel, a stress factor, a price, something, and then the arms cross live in front of you. You just caused it.
Wow.
Either the situation caused it, something you said caused it, something you made her think of caused it. Now that's a shift of behavior that is, you can have actionable intel from that. The opposite is static. Someone's got a frown. Someone's got their legs crossed. Someone's taking up a big space at the poker table. Someone's, you know, whatever it might be, that's static. You walk into the situation, it's already there. You didn't do it. It doesn't help you very much because you're going to try to interpret it probably wrong. And then it's going to lead to a vague outcome. It's not very actionable. Mm-hmm. However, the shift of behavior side is a whole world. And in the shift of behavior side, only two things are going to happen. They shifted because they know, like, oh, that sounds great. I would love to go out with you next week. They know they're doing that. That's conscious behaviors. Subconscious behaviors are the ones where they're like, oh, I'd love to do that. But their feet are retreating and curling around the table leg for comfort out of freaking, you know, retreat, out of self-soothing. You know, that their thumbs retreat. All these signs that show withdrawal, like, oh, God, run. Her hips literally turn away from you, even though her face turns toward you. Run, dude, run. She's done with you. Like, those subtle subconscious tells she doesn't know she's doing are on the subconscious side. So you have two things, conscious and subconscious. On the conscious side, only two things happen. Either it's natural, like, yeah, you know, I'm still facing the same way. There's no other tells that exhibit any change. I'm like, yeah, you know what, Chuck, that'd be great. Why don't we get next Thursday? And sounds like a fair price on the car, you know, $19,000 for the used car. You know, yeah, you know, I'll talk to my wife. Sounds good. Everything is, I'm saying yes, I'm nodding, my thumbs are up, I'm open. Everything matches. That's conscious and natural. Probably true.
Right.
Conscious but unnatural acting poker players, all in, but their body's saying one thing, their face is something else, dating. If things don't match and there's an acting involved, a lot of overacting especially, go with the opposite. 99% of the time, go with the opposite. You'll probably be right. So in the conscious world, only two things happen. It's either acting or it's not acting, and they both lead to fairly good actionable information. The only other side of shifts of behavior is conscious and subconscious. Subconscious is where I live. That is where the gold mine of information is. If you're selling, negotiating, it's a gold mine for information. Here's why. If they're doing it subconsciously, they don't know they're doing it, and it's 100% accurate. And if I'm sitting here and I watch you exhibit a change of behavior that is subconscious, I know the information that just caused it. So I know exactly what you feel about it, and I know exactly how to modify it. I know exactly how to manipulate you,
wow,
bring you back in, how to create my framework or NLP right then on the spot, because I know how and why it happened. Because you can reverse engineer it in 1 second. So if I'm talking to you, like, you know what sounds great? You know, Adam, it's going to be $19,500 is going to be the bottom line for this car. And I watch your legs tighten. I watch your feet retreat. Your thumbs go down. Your body shifts away from you. There's a sigh, all these things, a grimace, a quick micro expression, but then your face lights up and you go, oh, you know what, Rich? That sounds great, buddy. You know what? It's really, you're my guy. I'm coming back next Thursday. I'm going to talk to my wife. I think we got enough money for it. All that's just a bunch of BS. I already know the truth. And so that's why subconscious tells are so crucial, especially in something like poker where there's something on the line, negotiations where there's something on the line, sells where there's something on the line, because you don't know if they're wasting your time, if they're telling you the truth, like where you stand with this, because it's kind of a negotiation when you're selling something. And so in a nutshell, that's the framework. And everything off of that is what I teach, all the subtle things to look for. Because in body language, it's easy to miss it if you don't know what to look for. But if you know what to look for, it's simple to look for it. You'll never miss it. You won't. Like if I tell you that if someone's got their thumbs up and you drop a price and you see their thumbs go down, they're like, oh, that sounds great. They are not digging with what you just said. Not digging it at all. So once you know that, you'll never miss it again in your life. So it's like learning these things. So that's when we role play. So I do in my seminar or my keynote, I have a big slideshow that has all these things that are very strong tells in the subconscious aspect of this whole flowchart, because they're so actionable. You can take that information and run with it right now and be correct and help yourself.
And so that's amazing. So are you then helping people once they like recognize the thumb thing, let's say, for example, is it then on them to figure out how to adjust what they want based on that? Or you try to also help them down that path?
No, so that's the other half of it.
Yeah.
Now what are you gonna do about it?
Gotcha.
So what are you gonna do about it?
Yeah.
Well, that's up to you. Are you gonna try to help them with a better price, you see that the price is what caused the problem. Okay, so you instantly, again, you know what? And I know that price is probably a factor for you right now, but we also have a deal right now. If you also buy this, we can do this for you, or we can give you a discount if you also do this. Like, you could maybe try to manipulate it live because you know that was what it was. Even though they came in saying, hey, I got 50 grand in my pocket. You know, like, it's just about evaluating the situation and adjusting. And some people aren't good at adjusting on the fly, but when you have intel that's been given to you, that's like, this is exactly what they're thinking. That's when you need to, especially in sales, you got to learn to take that and run with it correctly. Like, my wife does real estate. The worst thing I've seen a realtor do is show someone a house and talk. Like, literally, here's the kitchen, there's the living room, there's a camera, there's Chuck. I don't know why he's in my living room. There's the bathroom. And, like, walk around and talk.
Does he come with the house?
It's cool, unless it's like, hey, this is really rare wood. There's a story about this. The owner's, that's cool. But otherwise, just telling you what's obvious. Like, there's carpet, there's a window. Like, how about ask them questions? Like, hey, so you have kids on the way, that's right. You have kids already and a dog. If you have pets in the future, like, ask them questions, try to learn about them, and then watch their eyes and do little subtle things. Like, for instance, if a person's looking out the back of a house and you see them look at the backyard and they look at their husband with that little look like, yeah, this is cool. Look at you and see the backyard. Capitalize on that. You say, you know, I know you have kids coming on the way. A house like this is really rare because from the living room, the kitchen, the dining room, every part of this house, because it's a farmhouse design, you can see the backyard, and I know it's going to be important to you in the future. It's hard to find a house like that in this area. And I know with kids in the future, this is actually probably going to be really important to you. I don't know if you've thought about that. Well, I know you have because you just lit up and I'm running with it. Now it's in your brain. Wow. Now there's an image in your brain where you're looking at your husband again. You're like, we really got to buy this house. We're probably not going to find another one with such a great setup like this. Wow. So it's about reeling it in. Mm-hmm. Capitalizing on stuff that's been given to you.
Is there even, I'm sure, Chuck, in the fight world, there's got to be body language things that you can pick up on.
We were talking about that earlier.
Okay,
I mean, I do that all the time. Like, a good sign of that I hurt somebody with a punch is like, give me a wave off. Like, that was nothing. You know,
Can you give us an example?
We could just take his word for it.
When I fought Alistair Overeem, when I fought him, Overeem Pride, I hit him with a straight right, and he'd go, oh, no, I don't know, I came right back in with what looked like it was going to be a straight right and threw the overhand, and that's what set up my knockout.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's one of those things, we try to read the body language a lot, not quite to the extent he does.
Yeah.
But,
there could be something in Chuck's eyes, though, right, if you're alongside that you could even pick up on, or no?
So here's the thing that's interesting. In his industry, he knows that specific thread of what he's looking for and feels it, and he's in tune with it as an expert far better than I would as a body language expert, because he's looking for those subtle things in every industry. That's because he's not taking that and trying to influence that person.
Right.
But he's doing it to protect himself. He sees this person moving a certain way, and their hips move. He knows they're stepping back before they step back, or telegraphing a punch, like someone's winding up. It's like you see it coming a mile away.
Yeah.
He probably sees stuff at such a fine level way before we do,
right?
Because that's his world, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
There was a comedian named Brody Stevens, rest in peace. Just an amazing comic, big crowd work guy, and he used to just, he'd do things where he'd be like, "Where are you from?" He'd see if I was wearing a Chicago Cubs shirt, he'd be like, "Chicago, home of the Cubs. I'm great friends with Chris Bryant, third baseman. Who knows him? Who has a picture with him? That's what I thought. I'm more famous than you are. I was in The Hangover 1 and 2. I was cut out of Due Date." He does shit like that, but he would always go, you'd see someone with their arms crossed, and he'd go, "Arms crossed, negative body language," and he'd always do that, and it was like a fun throwaway. But just going back to you talking about people crossing their arms, and these are people who are sitting at the comedy club, but their arms crossed for, I don't know if it was comfort in the club or what, but why is that, or has that always been such a tell, like you said earlier with the dating?
But it isn't a tell.
Okay.
It's not a tell until you know literally
why they
got to that position.
Gotcha.
Some people sit that way out of self-control.
Okay, cool.
Literally out of self-control or self-comfort.
Yes.
A lot of things. There's a lot of reasons they might be already in that position, but you didn't cause it. And so it's a mistake to sometimes think, I had this one friend in college, every time I would touch something, oh, you nervous? I'm like, no, but now I'm pissed. Like, I wasn't, but now I'm conscious of you thinking I am, and that's weird. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
So you call me out on anything.
I've had people say that to me before, you're just closed off, and I'm obviously I'm actually a little tired, my arm's a little tired.
Yeah, you're tired of them dangling, and also you don't want to punch people. I'm trying to keep my fist tight.
Try not to hit you.
Exactly. That should be your answer. I just don't want to hit you right now. And then you drop them down. They're like, can you cross your arms back?
Yeah, I guess not knowing, if for Brody to say, you know, arms crossed, negative body language. It's like, well, how do you know they weren't just crossed from the previous comedian and Brody just hit the stage, right? Like they could have been.
Or the person literally out of comfort. Like I actually sometimes cross my arms. It's easier to lock them in and then they hang. I don't have to support them.
Yeah.
It's just easy.
Comfortable, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not disgruntled. I'm not closed off. I'm not hiding my nipples showing. I'm not hiding a stain. I'm not, there's a million reasons you cross your arms.
Right.
I just don't want to have my arms dangling. You know, I mean, I don't want to touch the guy next to me. I mean, there's a million reasons.
Do you ever, does it ever become annoying, like, with how observant you are? Like, if you're on an airplane, even, like, do you find yourself, do you like people watching? Or
I
is
love
it,
people
you
watching.
You do, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Me too, yeah.
My buddy, my hypnotist partner, back in the day, we would watch people, and he was from a clinical side. He'd be like, she's been abused. And just from watching her, how her hips are shifted.
What
like,
the
literally,
fuck?
Like, to that detail, how you carry yourself. And, like, so I'm all about the shift of change of behavior, because that's where I live, and he's more the clinical side. So, like, I would sit in a bar at Mother's downtown San Luis Obispo, and my buddy owned it. I would sit upstairs, and I'd watch people say, okay, here we go. That guy right there, he is going to go talk to that girl in 10 seconds. 10, 9, and I just watch it play out. She's going to say no. She's going to smile, get a free drink. They're going to laugh about it. He's going to get rejected. You see it. It's just, you see it coming. You see it coming a mile away. He thinks he's smooth. It's like, this girl's done this every night this year. Like, it's just so predictable.
See, that's specific. I'd just be like, that guy's Jewish. And be like, well, yeah, he's wearing a yarmulke. You know, like, but that's like, you're really breaking people down and actually...
Well, that's the fun of
anticipating
it.
That
was our game. That was literally our game in public. So we love people watching and predicting what's going to happen.
That's phenomenal, dude. So it never gets old or boring. Like the just having
old.
Your brain.
People never get boring.
Yeah.
No. They get annoying as hell, but they don't get boring.
Is there a certain...
They get annoying as hell.
Oh, yeah. I'm always trying to pick up on, like, when I am on a flight, you know, I fly a lot, and I know you do, like, is there, like, are you, you know, like, with flight attendants, I'm always trying to immediately just gauge, like, you know, how many flights they've done. You can tell, like, some are just peppy, some are forcing the pep, so I give a little bit more slack on, you know, if I, you know, need something or whatever, and I'm
so,
usually...
Some are like they've been doing this job way too long.
Totally, totally. Yeah. You can tell right away, though, huh, with people like that.
They really can. For this job.
Yeah.
You can also change that real quick.
Yeah.
I can walk right... I'm very, very happy when I go into a plane.
Yeah.
And I'm going, hey, you know, hey, how's it going? Have a good
me
day.
Me too.
You know,
I'll just always...
I go sit down, and like today, I got bumped to first class. I'm sitting right at the front, and the girl's really sweet, and she saw me doing my cards, and I was doing some crazy stuff. She's like, wow. I'm like, I mean, you can get anything you want at that point, too, but that's not why I do it. But it's just like, get her on my team, you know, it's just...
But that's a good rule of thumb in life. I mean, mm-hmm. I found that out, I think, whether reading about it or hearing it, and just being an innately, you know, nice person, like, but, and also learning from my own experiences of when I've gotten frustrated and allowed that to bleed through and, like, get upset with someone at the desk, knowing well and full that it wasn't their fault, and, like, you're killing the messenger. And like, once you really, like... give benefit of the doubt and kill it with kindness. And that's why I try to do with crowd work. And it's why I keep audiences on my side, because I give these hecklers a chance and be nice and then have more justification and jurisdiction to slam them later, especially with the crowd being on my side,
right.
Which is a great tool. But even just in life, trying to get things, like you just said, like being nice, like who knows the bump in first class, people could have seen you be nice and go, this guy's a...
Yeah, and you're dealing with an airline, you're dealing with people who are disgruntled and loose in flights and tight connections. It's just,
oh,
it's like,
fuck that.
It's a shit show now. It used to not be so bad. And
yeah.
So,
being nice, it's just
amazing.
You don't know what they're going through, you don't know what their problem is, what's caused them problems that day. It's just easier to be nice. And like you said, you get bored from being nice than being an ass.
And it turns our knob down, too, because we're high anxiety people and we just go and thinking a lot. And it's like we're moving all the time and doing a lot. And it's like it turns that dial down because... If I could just be chill and talk to the girl next to me who's got a dog. I'm like, you brought a dog on the plane? Where'd it go to the bathroom? You've been in the airport for an hour. Like, how does that work? And so I chat with her as soon as she sat down and broke the ice. Because otherwise, it's just, you know, that awkward thing. You're like 3 hours of sitting next to this person. And like,
it's just so weird.
Are they going to talk to me? I got cards up. They're going to ask to do a card trick. I just don't
want
to do
really?
It right now. And like, so I try to like try to practice a little bit. And I guess, I don't know. Don't know who's next to me that's going to ask.
Oh, man.
But sometimes it's cool because I break the ice and talk, you know. It's cool.
So when you take cards out, like, that's just a way for you to kind of... It's almost like with basketball players that, like, walk around the basketball. They just kind of get in the feel.
It's kind of warming up.
Yeah.
Get staying limber. And yeah.
But you're almost asking for it at that point.
His mechanics are really good.
Yeah.
I can fix a car. Like, you can't believe it. Yeah. Oil change. You got an oil change? Need an oil change? Call me up.
Yeah.
He's really good at that.
Did you always... I mean, you mentioned, do you have brothers and sisters? No.
No, I have a sister, yeah.
Yeah, and what does she do?
She owns a hair salon.
Whoa.
Yeah, yeah.
another very, like, you know, high people person.
Oh, she's very social.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's in our DNA. She and I are very, very similar.
Wow. Chuck
met her on FaceTime one time out in Kansas City, but she's a sweetheart. She's a people. All of our friends, she and I both, I think, are the glue between them all. Like, I swear,
amazing.
She's very social.
So what's that like when you two get together? I mean, just it's, party city.
Well, her husband and my wife just roll their eyes. They're just like...
Yeah.
Like, last time I was there a few weeks ago, literally I was in the kitchen with some other relatives and some friends of hers, and I don't know, she came over and tried to give me a headlock or something, and her husband just like, I just ignore it. It's just like, I just, these two, like, it's just, they're in their own world.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's kind of funny.
And so you have two kids, you said? Twins?
I have twins, yeah.
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 I have twin nieces. You said yours are five?
They just turned six.
Like, six.
Yeah.
Amazing, congrats. Yeah. My nieces are
super,
about to turn.
Super tall.
Super tall?
Yeah.
Crazy tall. Whoa.
Crazy tall. Crazy
tall. Like, they're in kindergarten, and they look like third graders.
Shut
up. I kid
up.
You not. It's like, here's the kids. Here's them, and there's the kids again, like in their class.
Yo.
Like, they're tall. They're
so tall. What, I mean, do you just, are you like, hey, you guys need to, you can't just be, you know, greeters at Best Buy. You got to be
but
like an
super
athlete.
Super sweet, super social, super aware and giving, and they're just, they're good kids, you know, but I don't know.
They take an interest in what you're doing? Do they know what's up?
Yeah, a little bit. I teach my little son, like, little things, and he makes up stuff. He'll take, like, two coins, like, together. He'd be like, look, Dad, look. He's like, look, now there's two. Like, he'd put two together. And
awesome.
Then the other day, I was like, that's so cool. Then he came with three, and he's like, watch, I did it again. He goes, look, I have two. He did it. I'm like, that's cool. That's amazing. And then he's like, put one down. And they did it again. I'm like, that was clever. You thought of three, you know? Like,
whoa.
Just kind of coming up, you know, thinking outside the box and coming up with his own version of things.
You try to encourage that type of thinking?
Creative thinking. Yeah, it's not really, I want him to learn magic. I don't want him beat up. You know, like, tease, you know, like, I got a magic hat, like, you know, like, it's really more like creative thinking, like, think outside the box, you know, there's no rules, like, do your own thing.
Yeah, that's a good, again, another good rule of thumb for life. I feel like, you know, I don't know when you kind of developed a plan like that and kind of a way to live, where you just kind of, I mean, I think for everyone, like, it's, life is a, you know, you're throwing darts, it's trial and error, right? You kind of decide for yourself after a while, after living and getting the reps and experiences of how I want my life to go, but I don't know why you strike me as someone who, at an early age, were like, this is right and wrong to me, these are my morals, these are my values, and I'm gonna kinda operate from that set.
I was pretty freaking set by 9 or 10.
That's what I'm saying,
lie.
That's
very
crazy.
Set, because I had chaos around me, like really bad violence, drug abuse, and I didn't have parents. It was just a lot of what drove me into this world of just reclusive, just watching people as a kid, you know, I didn't have friends, I didn't have brothers, sisters, I didn't have parents. Didn't go to school, didn't know how to read, so I'm just like freakishly observant, right? Just evaluating people, who's going to try to beat me, you know, try to get me or whatever. So by the time I was adopted, you know, I just like got in school and, you know, got back on course right away.
Right away?
Right away. Oh. But I was set. Like, my adoptive parents are pretty strict. They thought I was going to like try to be a troubled kid because of my Salinas background.
Yeah.
It's like, I was a good kid. You know, I had great street smarts. You can't get that in school. And I think that got me through a lot of trouble. It's just being able to be observant.
Can you speak to that, getting adopted and like what that was like? How long were you in like a group, a home?
No, I never, it's a long story.
Yes.
Man.
There's
a couple documentaries on the internet, on my website. And
wow.
If one of people want to check it out.
Where is that?
On richferguson.com.
Great.
Yeah, I'll go to YouTube and check it out.
It's got the full story.
Yeah. There was a documentary that won an award at a film festival a couple of years ago, film festivals, and it's called Becoming Rich, and it's a full hour long documentary about just my career and how I came from where I came.
Oh, definitely.
Anyways, the background in being adopted was weird because I came from not having parents,
yep,
or just kind of living in a really weird situation, and they came along. I was put in emergency foster care, protective services, mm-hmm. because there was a lot of chaos and violence and death threats and stuff. So I was discovered. They're like, well, there's a full-grown kid who hasn't gone to school, because back in the early 70s, like, it wasn't the checks and balances and technology we have today.
Right.
You can get away with that. And so I get taken away, put in this home for up to 3 months max, and they said, after that, you're going to go to foster care, man. So, like, during that time, a family down here, or in San Luis Obispo, was looking for a kid that was older, because they were older. And they came up to meet me up in Salinas, and they said, hey, you know, we're looking to adopt a kid, and you know what that means? I'm like, dude, I'm 11. I'm really a smart 11-year-old. Like, I know what's up.
Wow.
I get it. You know, I'm not, I might not be book smart, but I know what's up in the world, man. And
you're like, sir, I already stole your wallet.
Yeah,
and your
seriously.
Cock
no,
ring.
I just was, I was like, I didn't speak much, and I was very like sheltered, but like, I got how the world worked and what people were up to. And so they took me back to the ranch and
you got a good vibe from them, like that's
Seemed like a good family, and then the rest of the family was amazing, like, cool, really cool uncles and aunts and cousins and stuff. But after a few months they said, hey, so we, you know, you've been living with us for a little while, do you want to make this official, you know? And I'm like, okay, I mean, it's better than the life I had, I mean, honestly. And so let's do this. And they said, do you want to keep your name? And I was like, I did a variation of my name and changed my last name, of course, new social security number and all that, and that was it. Signed paperwork and I was legally their kid.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm glad I didn't go through all the boys' home crap and deal with all that violence and that whole thing, because that would have been rough. That would have been really hard.
I know people, we've talked about the people that bug you with tricks. I know you got some cards, you got some chips. Do you mind?
I just brought those for decoration.
For sure, yeah. No,
those are just there because I thought that would be the theme.
No, I was saying, I've been studying, so I want to see if you would be my, if I could practice on you.
Yeah,
I don't want to see your bullshit.
That'd be great. Yeah. And I'll do some comedy, do some magic.
Yeah, please. And we could just kind of
suck and then we'll switch
role play. Yeah. Chuck can just watch like a pervert.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Sure, why not? So we'll try this. This is interesting. This is a trick called... way too much time on my hands right here. So that's that trick. Okay, what's next?
Oh my God, I was like, all right, it's been Rich Ferguson at richferguson.com. I mean, go to it if you want. Yeah.
We'll try this. We do it with both of you if you want.
Yeah.
You put it in your hand, one of your hands. I don't know if you want to have Chuck hold your mic maybe.
Okay.
Okay. And then and it's coming close to me. And here's what you're going to do. You're going to put the poker chip in one of your hands and hold your hands out like this.
Okay.
But let me see which hand. Go ahead and do it. I won't look.
Okay.
And I will say, I did see in the reflection of the black right here. So, okay. So I could tell that it's not in this hand. It's probably in this hand. Yeah. Hand or which hand is it in?
Let's see.
Yeah. So it's in this hand. Yeah. So I can see right here in the reflection. So I'm going to try to do it again, but this time I won't look.
Okay.
I'm going to just look down.
Okay.
And Chuck's not going to help me. Tell me when you got it.
Okay.
And then I'm going to teach you a couple of techniques you can do to your friends.
Yeah.
This is just like basic stuff. So think about if it's in this hand or if it's in the same hand. Okay. So when you did it, and you had in that hand previously, it could still be there, or you could have switched it. So when you switched it, did you do it behind your back or in front of you?
In front of me.
So Chuck could have seen it.
Yeah.
Okay, so don't try not to let Chuck see it next time.
Okay,
so
great.
You have it in one of the two hands. When you switched it, do you remember if one hand went over or under the other hand? Do you recall?
I think so.
So it's in this hand. Okay, so you did switch it.
Yeah.
So what I did is I had you think for a second, like, oh shit, how do I answer that?
Yeah.
So you had that moment of like, oh crap, that's going to tell him if I switched it. So you tried to hesitate.
Yeah.
The hesitation alone was enough insight to know you did switch it. So it's in this hand. I believe it would be in this hand.
Yeah.
Take a look. It is. Yes. Okay, perfect. So do it again, this time behind your back so we can't see.
Okay, great.
You know, you can look. He's going to do it behind his back. No, I'll teach you another technique. This one's pretty cool. So bring it out in front of you. Okay, you made eye contact the whole time. So it could either still be in this hand or you could have switched it, right? So what I want you to do this time, I want you to think about this chip that's in one of these two hands, and I want you to do something for me in the count of three. Don't hesitate. I want you to do it fast, okay? Ready? One, two, three. Cross your hands. 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 Okay, it didn't work because you didn't know what to do. You were doing like gymnastics or something. Here, put your hands back out in front of you. It's interesting. We're going to try it like this. I want you to just cross your hands. Cross. Okay, you're actually literally doing it back and forth. I mean, like cross and keep them there. Okay. Okay, here, put them back out in front of you.
Dude, this is exposing a lot of lack of brain cells.
So, obviously in this hand.
Kids don't smoke pot.
It's obviously in this hand. You're protecting this hand far more than that hand. It's in this hand.
Yeah.
See. There it is. Yeah. So, that was a little harder for me because you were doing a lot of other role playing and stuff, but usually if someone has it in the hand they're trying to protect, they're going to do this and it's going to be here because they don't, it's kind of like hiding it from me a little bit, right?
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah. So, we'll do it one more time.
Okay.
I won't look.
Okay.
So I'm trying to teach you a couple. So now Chuck's going to guess it's in this hand or this hand. So Chuck, you're going to guess which hand it's in. Go ahead. I'm going to send it across to you. No. I'm going to send it across to you. That's the one. So Chuck can even do it. See? Let's see which hand it's in. There it is. See? You got it. There you go. It's so easy. This is amazing. It's like, Chuck. All right. It's like, I don't know how you do this shit. It's like...
I mean, okay, that was great.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
That was great. It doesn't matter. That was great.
I have a deck of cards here, though.
That's great, man. I mean, I just feel like an idiot.
I'm trying to teach you stuff, you know?
Yeah, I love it.
We'll try this. Do you have a favorite card by chance?
Yeah.
What is it?
I'd say probably the King of
Hearts. I do have a favorite card. It's probably something.
No, I'd say it's a King of Hearts or the Joker.
The Joker. Okay, we could do that. So King of Hearts and Joker. I'm going to try a trick. You just mentioned those two cards randomly. Watch very carefully. I'm going to take the top two cards. Watch right here. Here's one. I don't know what it is. I'm going to show it to you. So there's one card. The Joker. Look at that. So there's watch. Pay attention. So there's one card, right? So there's one card. That's one down. Now I'm going to do a second card. I told him I'm going to do two cards. The second one's going to be the King of Hearts. Oh, shoot. I missed it. Hold on. King of Hearts. King of Hearts?
Yeah, I think so.
King of Hearts. Hold on. I'm missing it a little bit today. Hold on. I can do this. Hold on.
You know what it is.
I can do this. I can do this. I can do it. I can do it. It's right. Right.
The fuck's happening?
Wait, hold on. It's right.
The fuck's happening?
Oh, Chuck's seen this trick. Yeah, it's right there, man. Pay attention. Here's the card you mentioned.
Wait, I'm going to pull a Harrison Ford on when David Blaine.
Oh, yeah, that was great. That was great. Get the fuck out of here. Yeah. That was good.
Which that was. Yeah. Dude, that is fucking crazy. Even with Chuck going, oh, I know where it is, then started my brain to go, oh, shit, okay, it's there. But even when I started to go, okay, it's there, I still,
yeah,
no. I was glancing down.
I would have never thought it was there either, except I know him.
That's you know, I'm up to something.
When he couldn't find it in the deck, I'm like, okay.
Like, where's it at? Like, where's the card, right, obviously?
Isn't it amazing how, though, like, just listening to this whole chat, like, and still knowing that you can play people like that, right. I still was very much invested when you were like, oh, dang, I screwed up. In my head, I was like, this guy's just having a bad day. Like, I'm like, this is just a rough Magic day for Rich Ferguson. And then you're like, no, dumb, it's fucking right there. Like, that's crazy.
It just adds a little bit of fun. I mean, it's not really to make fun of people or anything.
No, but, like, but it helps for people to, again, like, you being like, oh, man, like, let me try this again. Like, I had empathy for you and was like, well, I hope he figures it out.
There's a roller coaster there. I'll tell a little tip about Magic that I came across years ago when I first was taking watches off people. First time I did, I was like, hey, here's your watch back. And then I felt creepy. I'm like, why did I give it back? Why didn't I, like, do something else? Like, why didn't I put it on my wrist? So I started doing stuff where I try to get a guy's watch on my wrist while I'm like, here, you take write something on a piece of paper, and I'm going to go over here. Like, a minute later, and I'm over here doing something, getting the watch on. He doesn't know it, and I'm over here doing this, and I cover it up. I'm like, all right, got the prediction written down? Now, you wrote something down I couldn't know. I'm going to try to guess what it is. And I do this whole other trick, like three tricks later. Then later, I say, you know, what time is it? Let me see, it's 7:15. Okay, I got enough time for another trick. And, like, how long is it going to take for them to notice the watch? So then it was that version. And then it was, like, the thing that most magicians do that I cringe at, which is, like, hanging over their head, facing the audience, hey, I got his watch, and everyone laughs, and he feels like a fool. I didn't do that for like 1 minute. And it built, and then it started to become like literally live in a show where I'm like, you know, you've been a really great helper. I'm gonna give you a souvenir. And I bring a box over that's wrapped, and I open it up, inside there, it's wrapped again, inside there's their watch. And then it's like, how did that happen in front of the audience? So that's kind of cool for like a show.
Uh-huh.
But then the thing I started realizing is the psychology of it. If I'm gonna take some watch off, I have two people here at a card table, let's say. And I take this dude's watch here in a card trick. I'm like, here, dude, hold the card like this, put it between your hands, boom, got that, boom, okay. And I'm setting the watch up, and I got the band almost off. And then I say, now we're gonna try this. Keep the card face down on the table so I can't find it. Boom, boom, I take the watch, right? Say I take this guy's watch. Later in the show, when I reveal that there's a watch, I'm not gonna do it to this guy. I'm gonna do it to another guy. Hey guys, thank you so much for watching the show. I have one souvenir for you before I go. And I bring this thing out that's sealed. It's in an envelope, it's been licked, it's like in there. You can see the window, and there's a watch in it. I say, missing something? And I rip it open, and I pull out the watch, and it's dangling right here, just out of his sight. I'm like, missing something? The whole audience loses their shit, because they're like, no way! So they go from nothing to here, and then I go to this guy, is this your watch? And he goes, no. They go down, not all the way down, just partly down. They go, oh, that would have been cool. I didn't think that was possible. Yeah. But they don't go all the way back down. And I just mess with it, it's his watch. The difference from here to there, and then back to him at the end, it's double. It's more impact, and I get a little humor out of it. I get a little extra punch. It's like they think I messed up maybe, or whatever it is. Like, I like these roller coastery moments where it feels like I messed up maybe.
Yeah,
I think you get more out of it.
Totally.
Yeah, no,
that's just
my
opinion.
Really does. I mean, it really works. I mean,
you sucked me in. That was an emotional roller coaster.
Yeah.
Took me a second, but it took me a second when I didn't think anything of it until he started messed up once, and then I'm like, the second time I went, oh, it's going to be there. I know this guy, it's going to be there. Just because I've seen you do it so many times.
Yeah.
Rich, so where can, when you're traveling and performing, you're going to start to get back to that, right?
Yeah, we're working now. Yeah, things are opened up. Corporate events are happening. Keynotes, requests are happening. It's all happening. Thank goodness, man.
Where do people find all that info or try to book
it? Just go to my name, richferguson.com, and everything's on there. It's a great site that has just kind of what I offer for magic, what I offer for keynotes and seminars for body language and influence, and And
like he's got a bunch of good pranks on real pranks. On
yeah,
magic pranks back in the, like.
He, I mean, I still do it for fun. It's so the thing about YouTube. I have, I don't know how many hundreds upon hundreds of millions of views on YouTube. A lot.
Awesome.
And millions of followers on YouTube.
Good for you.
And it's all been just shenanigans. It's not even. It's something I did as a hobby. It's not. I don't show like legitimate performances. I don't have one piece of a performance on there. There's almost one or two videos on psychology. Mostly, it's just like screwing around with friends for fun. It's really like a side hobby to release some tension. Took off so big that like people will know me from that. But that's not really my professional side. That's not my speaking or my magic.
Right.
But they're related. Cause
it's great to have those clips to get work, I'm sure, right? If people are like, hey, where can we check out something to get a sense of who you are?
Yeah, some of that's on there. Like, yeah. I did a TED Talk last year on body language, and it's really good.
Awesome.
And that gives you a good flavor.
It's all on YouTube? People can check it out?
It's on YouTube if you look me up. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but on my website, that's all they got to do is go there and book my butt. I'll show up and I'll blow some minds and educate people.
Book my butt. The Book My Butt Tour starring Rich Ferguson.
Tour, yeah, you're going to open, or am I going to open for you? You've got
to. You know, I think we'll probably just come out together and do.
Okay, we'll just do it on the stage at the same time.
Yeah.
See, and people will just be like, I don't know what to watch or listen to.
Dude, there's a great, Roy Scovel and John Doerr, two great comics, and they did a thing on Conan once where it was about 5 years ago, where Conan said, we booked these guys for the same time, got it screwed up, so they're going to both do their acts. So they came out, and they're just so brilliant and alti where they came out and did a completely different act. It was almost kind of a jokey version of their act, and they both talked over each other the whole time, and so you just hear sound bites of each of their acts throughout, and it's very funny. At the end, John Doerr does a guitar closer, and Rory brings up somebody to do, like, the arms through their thing, and they're just at the same time, but it's brilliant. Anyway,
wow.
So we could do that.
That's awesome.
All right, so we like to close the Icebreakers podcast with a 10-question Q&A. From Inside the Actor Studio, RIP James Lifton. You would have no doubt been on at some point, so now we're going to take advantage of having you here and ask you these 10-question, get-to-know-you questions that will help the world figure out a little bit more about who Rich Ferguson is. Chuck, take on the first one.
What is your favorite word?
My favorite word?
Yeah. Word.
Probably same. S-A-M-E. Same.
Why? It's a unique answer.
I just think it's a unique word. Same. You know, it's an ambiguous word. It's like, how are you feeling? Blah, blah, blah. Same. You know, like, it's such a simple little word. I say it with my sister all the time. Like,
oh, really?
Same. Like, have the same feeling, same agreement. Like, on the same wavelength. I don't know. Kind of
good answer. I do like that word, too. What is your least favorite word?
That's a great. Do everyone ask this?
Yeah,
it's just
a, we asked Matthew McConaughey last week.
Wow, this is wild. My least favorite word, huh? Probably something along the lines of can't.
That's what McConaughey said.
You know, can't, kind of like
good it's company.
Like, it's like maybe you shouldn't, or maybe it's difficult. But don't say can't. Hmm. You know, yeah, not can't.
Fuck yeah. Chuck?
Okay, what turns you on?
Never not funny.
That's ambiguous, too. Turning on is like, it's like sparks your spark, you know, your soul versus arousal.
Yes.
So, you know, I think just human behavior really turns me on. Like, literally, it sparks, it makes me excited.
Wow.
It's just like when I see people and I can adjust something and help them, I can see they're afraid of something, I can adjust that. And boom, they're on a different track. It's amazing. So just human behavior turns me on. It really does.
Cool answer.
Yeah.
What turns you off?
I was going to say no disrespect to anyone, but they won't understand anyways. Not dumb people, but stupid people that just are mean, ignorant, irresponsible, careless. Like, it kind of drives me bonkers. They're so self-righteous, you know, in an airport or airplane or whatever. It's
people that think it's just all about them.
Yes.
I mean, I just had that in Virginia doing shows last week where I had to kick out a woman who was so drunk and so chatty, where again, I give chances, I try to include them in the act, I try to use her to get back into a bit even, stare at her during the bit so she just gets that she's being a distraction. And sometimes people just are like, I don't give a fuck what you're doing, I'm here. And she even said, she just goes, I haven't seen my friend in a while, I have some things to say. And I was like, well, I have some things to say for people who paid. And, like, you're kind of interrupting my dreams, you know, like, this is...
I watched him, I had to do that in Austin, the first time I saw him perform. And it was like, dude, like, how many times you got to ask you just to, you're talking in the front row and in the middle. You're making it hard for us to hear him.
Yeah. And once, like, you start affecting the good time of other people, that's when I take it personal. And I always give chances. I always come in, kill it with kindness. I'm like, what's going on? What are you guys talking about? Whatever. What am I not? Is there a topic we can get on that maybe will resonate for you guys so you'll pay attention more? And then if there, sometimes that'll get them to go, you're right, my bad. And then like, keep going. Or sometimes they're combative and then I have to try to, you know, and then sometimes they're just so fucked up, they don't care. And I should have, Chuck and I joked, I was like, I should have been like, look, you guys can stay if you can beat up my friend Chuck. Chuck, you mind coming up? No, exactly. I should have done that. Right. And brought him up on stage.
Wow, that's wild.
Okay. What is your favorite curse word?
Curse word?
Yeah.
Oh, fucking cuss. Jesus. Okay. Oh, my God. This is going to be an awkward.
There's a lot of good ones. You don't curse probably in your TED Talks, no?
No, I definitely don't. Yeah, I don't really curse, but...
How about like when you get upset, and then if like great news comes your way and you just can't hold back?
Oh man, that's a tough one.
Is it a hell yeah? Is it a fuck yeah? A shit yeah?
I really don't curse that much, but I think it would have to be something like shit.
Yeah.
Because it's universal. Like it could be good or bad. Like, oh shit, or you know, like
shit.
He's a piece of shit. Like, it's just, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Carries a lot of power,
for
sure.
Yeah, I think that maybe shit.
It's universal, too.
Yeah. I don't know, man.
That's a good answer.
That's probably best I can do on that.
We can accept that. We can accept that. What sound or noise do you love?
What sound or noise?
Yeah.
Well, with someone who suffers from Asperger's, I like people to shut the hell up. I like no noise. So, I don't like noise. You know, I have earplugs in my pocket. I wear them almost nonstop.
No way.
I don't like noise. I don't like noise. But my favorite noise would be something natural, like birds or trees, water running.
Ocean, yeah.
Well, I think you covered the next question. What sound or noise do you hate?
Yeah.
all of them.
Things that should stop. You know, things that shouldn't be happening.
What a
like
great
a squeaky
way.
Wheel. Oh, oh, dude, shit. I'm gonna knock you out twice tonight. A squeaky wheel. A dripping
the sound of a concussion live during a podcast.
Yeah, a clicking clock. A ticking clock. Like, it's bad. Like, I can't handle
a ticking
noises.
Clock does suck. That's it. All right, Chuck.
Noises that can be prevented.
Well, I think you're,
what profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Probably something along the lines of investigation.
Mm.
Because I think I'm really good at clues.
Yeah,
I'm really good. I've talked to people in police and
you have
legal areas. And,
jury, actually, on your jury thing before, too.
Yeah, I helped him with something to like talk to the lawyer about evaluating people, but that was a little different. I'm talking about going in and solving crimes because I think I'm really good at putting clues together. I love it.
Do that.
I really like it.
Do you watch those shows?
I do. Yeah, I do.
You got a favorite?
Some
of that Forensic Files.
One of my favorite shows was Lie to Me on ABC. It's about this guy who was a body language expert, and he would help people, and he would be hired to like find out if someone's cheating or if someone's embezzling money or whatever it might be, and he would use his psychology and techniques against people. But just solving crimes with my own style and approach and awareness would be really cool.
That's awesome. Yeah. What profession would you not like to do?
Probably magicians, magic type stuff. Like, just such a geek.
That's
boring, dude.
It's hacky, yeah.
What I would not want to do, geez. I don't know. I'm one of those people, I'm pretty happy where I'm planted. I don't know. I can't, I mean, no one wants to shovel poop, but it's like, I don't know, man. I worked on a farm. I've done everything, and I don't.
You have the ability to turn whatever you're doing into
probably stripping, because I don't know. If
well, you did that, right? Been there, done that.
I'm pretty pale. I don't know. I mean,
yeah, there's not a market for
it. Yeah, it's...
I don't know. The goatee had something extra to be desired, yeah.
Some people like that peppery look, you
they
know.
They do? They do?
Maybe. not want to do a job. He said a career or job.
Yeah, profession,
boy,
yeah.
Oh, boy. What do people normally answer? Give me A, B, C, D, and I'll
what did McConaughey say? McConaughey, I think, said...
Atheist.
Yeah, that's right.
That's a career, though? That's not a career.
Well, dude, he just... Yeah, exactly. I think he was the same way with you. He was like, I've done that. I wouldn't mind doing that.
I could be happy being a plumber. I'd be happy being anything, you know, if I was decent at it.
Cool.
You know, I'd be a fighter if I was a little stronger or whatever. I mean, I'm a pretty good fighter for my size, but I mean, I don't know.
Let's get you guys in the ring, you know?
You know, I'm a YouTuber. That's the new thing
right now.
That's
the new thing. We can box.
But, you know, I got a good, you know, Khoi Khan hit, you know, like knockout punch, man. We could do this. Woo! Long as I stay away from you and run, I'm good, man.
All right, lastly, if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Welcome, here's your mom.
Whoa.
Taking way too early.
Yeah. Wow. Great answer, man.
Yeah. That was an easy one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're incredible. It's a real treat to meet you. Chuck has just, you know, praised you like none other, and you back it up, man.
This guy's a good guy, right here.
I don't vouch for too many people, and he's one of them.
He doesn't. He's even vouched for me and become his co-host. No, but seriously, dude, you are as impressive on stage as you are off, and I can't wait to see you live, quite honestly, and see you do your thing. Like, you blew my mind in this tiny fucking room. I can't imagine what it's like with a room full of people. So,
well, it's awesome to be here. Super honored to be on.
Yeah. Were we recording, by the way? Can we start recording after Rich leaves? Yeah.
Cool. Okay, good. Cool. So the teaser's worked now. We can actually do the show. Okay. This is good. Perfect. Yeah.
We like an hour and 20-minute teaser, and then we
do the
show.
I always like to do a rehearsal.
Yeah.
I
mean, yeah. This was the fluffer to the, which is another job. That's the job I would not do. That's the one.
That's why I said no mic for me. I'm not, no fluffer for me. Like.
Good night, everybody.